got bad information. I'm not really technically savvy, you know. Just high tech stuff.
Welcome to PACE. I'm Nancy, the executive director. PACE and all here. Centers are independent.
Here.
Here. Do we have any additions to the agenda? Any citizen input? Any input from the mental health board?
Not this morning.
We'll have approval of the minutes from January
23rd. I move we approve the minutes as presented in the packet.
I second the motion.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
I don't have any specific comments this morning, except to say that I think went on record last month with regard to the number of members of our board. I don't see any reason to change what we said last week, unless you guys feel different than you felt a month ago. In that case, we'll stay where we are. Peter.
Just to catch people up, at the county board meeting on February 12th, or the county, it was the committee of the whole meeting, there was discussion about the expansion of the Developmental Disability Board from 3 to 5 members, as is allowable by statute. Again, that is permissive legislation. It is not required. The county board deferred on that issue. And it'll be, I think, on the agenda again for the March meeting of the Committee of the Whole. And as Michael stated, I have gone on board. I did a briefing memo for the county board, which said that, in my opinion, that would be a good idea to expand. That, however, is the decision of the county board. They are the ones that will make the call on that. We have nothing to say about that. They only appoint our members, and so I'm going to leave it there. I had a meeting last week with the director of HFS, along with our people from ACMI, our state association. Julie Hamos and some of her staff were there, and we were really, the focus of the meeting was on Medicaid and the expansion of Medicaid, which is related to the Affordable Care Act that's going to occur in 2014. And the primary question we had is, where do local funders fit into the whole scheme of things with regard to Medicaid expansion? We didn't get any real good answers, but we were able to kind of talk about some of the issues with her. And we spent about an hour and 15 minutes, actually, which is quite a bit of time for the director to take in that kind of a meeting. It's very clear that their primary focus is on seniors and people with disabilities, which essentially take up roughly 55% of the Medicaid budget. They're looking at where they can, how they can control costs. And managed care is what they're going to be using. The fact of the matter is that our part of Medicaid is pretty small when you look at the grand scheme of things. Most of the Medicaid costs relate to physical health as opposed to behavioral health or people with developmental disabilities. That went on this past week, and we do have some connections with some of her staff, which I think are going to be helpful, and that will work on some of the questions that we left for them. The other thing I wanted to point out is that we did we completed the application process, closed the application process down, and you have in front of you, hot off the press, a listing of the applications for the Developmental Disability Board and also for the Mental Health Board. For those of you who are not aware, the Mental Health Board and the Developmental Disability Board have a intergovernmental agreement, which essentially they share the administrative costs associated with operation of both boards. And there also is a kind of a transparency agreement between the two boards that we share budget information with each other. But more importantly, both boards do have a responsibility for developmental disabilities. And as a result, the president of the two boards and I meet quarterly to review both the intergovernmental agreement as well as we talk about things related to developmental disabilities and anything that touches on that. I think sometimes Michael, who's the president, gets hears more about the mental health side than he probably wants to hear. But the reality is that the part of the agreement is that the two boards will collaborate and make sure that we have integrated planning related to how the mental health board spends its money that's allocated to developmental disabilities. So you'll notice when you look at these two sheets of paper, these two spreadsheets, on the mental health board side, there are a number of applications that relate to developmental disabilities. And, you know, so we look at the total amount of money and make decisions based on what is in the best interest of our community based on what both boards think. So that said, the other thing I wanted to mention to catch the board up on, and Michael and I have had some conversations on this, and is that Lynn Canfield and I have been meeting with a number of families that have presented with different kinds of problems, mostly related to placement. Some are LIGAS class, but some of them are just emergency situations where people are really in trouble. And the whole issue of one of the questions I asked Lynn was, how many people in the LIGAS class are there that could potentially be needing the services? And I believe that the number on the PUNS list is something like about 26. And
it's been selected so far.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then there's another. We asked the state to give us an idea of how many people in the LIGAS class that are in ICFDDs could potentially be from Champaign County originally and perhaps want to return to Champaign County. They don't really track county of origin. And so we were, I think that they, for the most part, we couldn't get a real good answer, although they said that they would look into it. So the idea of this was we wanted to try to get an idea so that the board would be aware of exactly what kinds of potential impact LIGAS is going to have on us here in Champaign County. And so that's the best we can do for now. One of the ideas that we've had because of some of the issues related to placement is that there is going to be a capacity problem with regard to residential. And the problem is that there just there aren't enough residential spots or placements available for this 30-some people that we are anticipating are going to be needing placement. And so one of the ideas that we're talking about, and Michael and I talked about this last week, was the possibility of having a public hearing to try to get an idea from the public, people that have issues, that they could come forward and kind of talk about what kinds of issues they're presenting. And we would also attempt to invite legislators as well as providers to talk about what their plans are to meet this capacity issue that is going to be coming up. So we're tentatively thinking about the public hearing being in September so that we have adequate lead time to plan it. And so anyway, that's on the agenda at this point. And that pretty much concludes my remarks.
Thank you. If you have had, I'll add, going back to my saying something, if you've had a chance to look at the allocation request, you'll see that our fiscal year 13 funding was $3.2 million. Does that include the adjustments that we had to make? And does it include the mental health board money? Is that in that 3.2?
It does not include the mental health board.
Okay. So I guess what I'm warning you all about is that even though the requests are 3.5, we may not have anywhere near that. We have not heard from the county yet as to what they anticipate that our funding level might be. Lynn, do you have anything to add?
No. I did talk about some of the same issues that he just covered in my staff report. I got a current number for people in ICFs seeking CELA through LIGAS, and that was fine. But that's, when Pete looked into it further, it was, you know, it could be infinity. It could be up to the number of people housed in ICFs. It is really a gas beyond the 5 currently seeking. So, otherwise, and because there was no PUNS update since my last staff report, I put some other PUNS reports in there that I thought were of interest. The thing that I found most interesting was that if you look at the summary by multiple diagnosis for this is statewide. MI and MR dual diagnosis is by far the highest. And I thought, well, that's so interesting because that's been for many years for me the population of greatest concern. So I thought that was interesting that it's 4,000 statewide. So anyway, there were other details that I thought were of interest, the age, individual age of people waiting for services. They're in their 20s now. So that reflects the great failure, you know, of the state to create capacity as people leave the schools. 8,000. And caretaker age has been the concern, but when I looked and I felt heartened that the highest group is under 60. That one made me feel a little better. Anyway, no big surprises, but I thought the details were interesting, and they're not specific to this community, but they probably hold true in this community to a great extent, anyway.
Thank you. Any agency input? We'll approve claims.
I move we approve the claims as presented in our packet.
Yes, I second that motion.
Do we need a roll call for this? All in favor?
Aye.
I never remember about the roll call.
It's only when we're standing.
We're lucky enough again this month to have some more presentations. I assume I'll just call them as they're listed, and if you want to go in some other order, that's fine too. But community elements?
Okay. I'm Kathy Kessler, and this is Dan Beagles from Community Elements. I'm going to give just a little bit of an overview of the program, and then Dan's going to talk about the focus and where we're moving with the program now. Our program, and hopefully everybody got a handout that we left over here. Did everybody get a handout that
if
talks about the
didn't,
criteria of the program?
You
okay.
Can just give me a hand.
Okay.
I don't think so.
All right. Our program is service coordination services for the developmentally disabled and the mentally ill. Our program has been in existence since September of this year. Okay, we started by kind of trying to do the groundwork, and by that, what we did initially was we became much more educated about the developmentally disabled and services that were available for the developmentally disabled in Champaign County. We initially spent a lot of time talking with different service providers, DSC. We spent a lot of time with Ron and Heather. They've been very supportive in helping us go the direction that we need to go in developing this program. We met with Jennifer at Community Choices, and we've also met with residential developers, regional planning, and then the worker also met with Kevin Elliott along with Ron and Heather one for a meeting. We've been able to meet with the treatment, two of the different treatment teams in the community, one at Urbana High School and another at Centennial High School, who have made referrals to the program. We've also met with the apartment service supervisor at DSC. During the initial phase, we also, in order to become more educated about the services that were available, we attended the disability fair that was held last October. And our worker at the time was able to get a lot of information about all the different developmentally disabled services that were available. She was able to make a lot of contacts with a lot of the different service facilitators there. From there, we've also done several speaking engagements. We've done one at the Community Choices Family Group. Our worker went and spoke with the family group. Dan just recently did a presentation for the Crisis Intervention Team through U of I, where they train police officers, and they had asked him to come in and talk a little bit about intellectual disabilities. So he just recently did a presentation for them. So, you know, also during this phase, we spent time developing this flyer, putting the paperwork in process that was necessary, you know, to be able to collect the data that you're looking for. We also, during this period of time, Community Elements changed the computer system, so we had to readapt to a new computer system also and learn that so that we can record all the statistics and data that we need to do. So far, we've had 13 referrals this year, and we have six that Dan is actively working with now. We have one individual that's on hold because there's some guardianship issues that we're trying to get worked out. We had another referral that we found that the individual did not have a developmental disability, so we made linkages for that individual to our benefit case manager at the center to help her get Social Security disability, and also we referred them also to RPC to see about if, you know, we have to determine that she does have a disability, and then we can continue to help her. I'm going to now turn it over to Dan.
Okay. Thank you, Kay. First of all, I think I value this presentation a lot. I've only been in this program for about a month now, but I think it can do great things in the community if I think that we work together as agencies, and also I think on my part, just kind of increasing the community exposure of this program, getting out there, speaking to groups, setting up our own space at the Disability Expo and that sort of thing. So really right now I'm just thinking about how in the future do we make this program grow? How do we provide these services the best? And I think at the top of my list is just building rapport and continuing to develop trust with the individuals that I'm working with. In my mind, I think consistency is key. So meeting with those people either weekly or biweekly in person, assessing their needs and their desires, and then helping them make that happen. Now, how do I help make that happen? I think ideally there would be a multidimensional support structure in place between myself and our agency at Community Elements and many different supports out in the community and in their own household. Right now, I'm working very closely with many of the families and the guardians of the individuals that I'm working with. sometimes it seems as if they're very unsure about change. Their anxiety level increases. So I think the more I'm around, the more I discuss things with them directly in person, you know, I seem to develop that trust, and it's a little bit easier after that. Second is schools and adult literacy programs, just linking individuals of those if there's a need there. As Kathy mentioned, I'm already working closely with Centennial and Urbana High School, but I would like to continue kind of increasing that network of educational establishments. The third is local law enforcement and the court system. I was very pleased to have the opportunity opportunity to present to the crisis intervention team for the Urbana and Danville police. They had some pretty good feedback, and they seemed to really kind of absorb the different communication tips and things like that that I was able to offer. Next is employment volunteering and vocational training. I know we have some really great programs present in this area, and we have many, many, many individuals who are aging out of the school system or who are now wanting to seek employment after, not having work for so long. And due to my great experience working at other providers in the area and knowing those vocational training programs, on a firsthand basis, I'm really passionate about getting those people linked up. So that's, I'm pursuing the Office of Rehabilitation Services and getting people linked up that way. Next is healthcare providers, so just meeting with assisting the clients at medical appointments if they request that. Commercial businesses, so whether it's recreational opportunities or different fundraisers and that type of thing, I think I want to get out and start doing that. And last but not least, I think this is amongst the most important things, is other service providers. My experience working with DSC and working with residential developers, I think they're extremely valuable resources. And in my mind, the individuals that I serve, I want to link them to other places because I know that, those places provide the kind of ideal services that I would need. And also developing the relationship where they feel open and encouraged to, refer people to our way because they know that we have the person's best interest in mind also. So I think linkage to other service providers is very, very, very important also. The next point is, like I discussed earlier, about exposure and community awareness. Just spreading the knowledge of the services that we offer around the community, meeting with service providers individually on a relatively consistent basis. So there's an ongoing conversation there and not just a, check in, hi, how are you, but you really get in, talk about people that could be possible referrals, and also just really try to make the service providing as smooth as possible. Media outlets, I'm still looking into radio and television ways to kind of get our message out there, try to, test the waters for different options that way. Last is attending these board meetings. I think it gives me a great opportunity to network with a lot of great service providers already present in the area. And last is just the advocacy groups, whether that's parent support groups, whether that's, self-advocacy groups. I just really want to become present at those things as well. Last is just if anyone has any questions for me, and also contact information is present on the flyer. If anyone has any questions, feel free to also contact me at the numbers listed there.
Any questions?
On your flyer, number 4, it says help provide a residential facility to your home. And then on number 7, there's an or, living in other settings and at risk. So you did mention that you're working with Centennial and Urbana High School, obviously those people aren't in residential settings. So I'm a little confused about who can access people.
So a supported residential setting can also be living with parents at home. That's considered a supportive environment. So I know it is easy. That's you're not the first person that's asking that question. So maybe we'll consider changing the verbiage in the wording there. Right. But yeah, you're welcome.
Someone else?
You said that you've had 13 referrals and 6 people you're working with right now. And you've only been in existence for a few months.
Right.
And as you get more known in the community, I would assume that you would be looking at going to all of these things you've been talking about, family groups, all of that sort of thing. What do you anticipate as far as the number of people you might be able to serve at this point?
Well, as you mentioned, it is fairly early, and I feel like most of the families and the clients are just now feeling comfortable to really express some honest feedback. What do I want? What does my, you know, child want? Things like that. So just now I'm sort of kind of getting into the thick of providing services. You know, a lot of us are aware of different meetings and paperwork and how time intensive those things can be. So right now, given that the number is fairly small, six, I think it would just kind of be an ongoing organic thing in my mind as I provide services, and I would give feedback to my supervisors and things like that, because I would never want to place myself in a situation where I'm not being able to give, you know, the attention that each person I think deserves and they need to get connected to these services.
We've worked with a lot more people that have not ended up being involved with us. And there are many reasons for that, and we're working through those obstacles because we know that the MI population is there. So we're excited that Dan is gathered a little bit more in the community, and we think we're anticipating that we'll get definitely to our target and maybe in the future can expand it. But that maybe gives you a little background on where we are with the numbers right now.
Well, actually, I'm just impressed that you done as much as you have in such a short time.
And one of the other things that we have found is we found that as we're growing this program, and as if we're not getting the referrals from all in the community, we have a number of individuals at Community Elements that we've used this as our opportunity to get these people linked to the different services in the community. So we've always kind of got that to fall back on. Our PSR program has a number of clients that are dually diagnosed, and we've kind of started looking at some of those folks, getting them hooked to the different services that they need. And Dan's already coming to me saying, there's all these other people. It's like, we'll get to them. It's like,
well, I think
so there really is the need.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, and
absolutely.
I think Lynn kind of testified to that in the information she's got in the past.
Yes.
I think if I wasn't so hopeful and optimistic about the changes, the positive changes that this program, as well as other programs, can make in the people's lives, I wouldn't be so gung-ho about getting things started, referring people. But I really think the positive experiences I've had in the past really just pushed me forward even more, just because I know that there's other places that these people can be served also. And I think that my service provision might be changed a little bit depending on how they're linked with other agencies. For example, if they're receiving case management also at a different agency serving individuals with developmental disabilities, and on our end we're mainly doing counseling, you know, doing that kind of thing, then obviously, you know, the time is kind of switched up. So it's always changing, you know. One person obviously is unique and to everybody else. So that time change is kind of ongoing, I would say.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Head Start.
My name is Lynn Watson, and this is Kathleen Liffitt. She is the director of the Head Start program here in Champaign County. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the overall program and then talk about the impact that your support has given the Head Start families in our community. Head Start is a federal program.
Thanks. So we do have a few funding sources, and then we probably will be monitored next year, sometime in the next 12 months, and that's a pretty detailed monitoring where seven or eight different monitors come in from the federal government and go over every little detail that we've done in the past 3 years. So something kind of new to Illinois, well, new to the United States, I guess, right, is the recompetition. If a Head Start program does not meet some pretty severe criteria for health and safety and financial and supporting children's extra needs, the grant can be put up for recompetition. And how many grants got put up this year?
About 100 this year, and then there were 134 last year.
And so what that means is the grant will go out to the community, and anybody in the community can take that grant from Champaign County Regional Planning. Currently, we have 533 children enrolled in Head Start, and we have 300 children on a wait list to get in. 47 children currently have an IEP at Head Start, and 7 children have IEPs in Early Head Start. Early Head Start is a 3-month to 3-year-old program, and the regular Head Start is 3-year-olds to 5-year-olds. Our main goal is to prepare kids for kindergarten, so that is what we really hone in on. We have several different options, center-based. We have 4 centers, one at Savoy, Rantoul, Champaign, and Urbana. We have 4 home daycare providers where it's a daycare home, but we have mentors going into the home and working with those providers to make sure that those services that they're providing are quality services and meet all the Head Start standards. And then we also have a home-based option where we have an individual teacher go into a home 90 minutes a week and work individually with a child at home. So we have several different options for our families. All of our kids, every single child that gets enrolled in Head Start gets several health screenings, which is lead and hemoglobin, developmental screenings, social-emotional screenings, and dental services. All of our children and families, anybody in a family has access to free dental in Head Start, which is a real boost for us. You jump in.
And we also do vision and hearing screening as well, and then, of course, make the appropriate referrals should we find a concern. So for those children birth to 3, then we would be making a referral to Child and Family Connections, and for children 3 to 5-year-old, we would be making a referral to their local school district for a full evaluation. Then some of those children, their families make a choice. The birth to 3 services absolutely are provided in our early Head Start settings. And then the 3 to 5-year-olds, we either make arrangements for therapy services on site. Some of those children duly enroll with their school district pre-K program, part of the day the family spends, the child spends at the pre-K program, and part of the day the child spends with us. Among our options are some 10-hour classrooms for both Head Start and early Head Start age children, and that provides services to families where the parent or parents are working and or going to school at least 30 hours a day. So among all of our
options,
yes, a week, thanks. Or sometimes it feels like 30 hours a day. And so we can serve families at any point in their family development. Should we find a family coming into our program needing support in order to enter the workforce, as well as then once they are employed. And the child then would be in a different option depending on family choice, as well as then what does the family need. Families who wish for a full day for their child, however, if they are not working or going to school, they are not able to choose the full day option. But we have 3.5-hour sessions, 6-hour sessions, and 10-hour sessions for that progression.
So one of the really important services that we provide is every single one of our family has a family advocate. And that is an advocate that will help them set goals for their family. It may be to go to school, to buy a house, to get a car. They work with them on goals, and then they also help them with food, transportation to appointments. So our families that don't have transportation, our advocates can take them to doctor's appointments, take them to other appointments that they may need in the community. And they're always working with the parents on self-reliance. It's really important that our parents do for themselves. Even though our family advocates are there to support them, we want them to be able to do that when their kids have gone on to kindergarten. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the specific services that you guys support for in Head Start, and that is my position. And some of the things that I do each year, I observe the classrooms for the first 45 days, every single one of our classrooms or options, and that is to just look for those children who might need extra support. And I do that also again in January and February. For those kids who we use the ASQ and the ASQ-SE, which is pretty familiar in our community. For those kids who have high ASQ-SE scores, I work with the teachers to develop extra social emotional goals to put on their lesson plan for those children so that they've got a little extra support. I'm referred children who have, which is on the increase every single year, children who are having behavioral or adjustment problems or developmental issues in the classroom that are interfering with their education and or the classroom as a whole, their quality of education. Those referrals, again, keep going up every year. Last year I had 74, and this year already I have 60 referrals for children who are having difficulties in the classroom. What we do for those children is we write a ISP. It's called an individual success plan, and their goals developed by the parent, family advocate, site manager, and the teachers, and myself, to help move that child from whatever is going on with them that's interfering with their education to a better place and get them ready for kindergarten. Those ISPs are reviewed every 60 days to check for progress and make sure that the goals are appropriate still. We offer counseling for anybody in a Head Start family in the household. I have an LCPC, and I also have a certified drug and alcohol counselor, so anybody in a Head Start family can get free counseling through me. I also do play therapy with our children for those kids who are having some problems with emotional issues. We have a parent support group that I try to get started every year down here, but I do have one that's running in Rantoul, and it's pretty strong, that we have about 8 to 9 parents attending on a monthly basis just for parent support concerns. We work a lot on parenting skills in that group. We are required every year by our grants, our standards, to offer mental health training to parents and to staff. So I do presentations at each of our sites on some mental health topic that's relevant to them. So it might be routines and schedules, getting children to go to bed regularly at a regular time, at a good time, instead of 3 in the morning.
Stress,
yeah, that's a good one. No stress at Head Start.
None at all.
I provide training to staff in the fall, usually a workshop, and we kind of survey the staff to see what kind of information that they want. But I've presented on autism and depression and domestic violence and those kinds of topics to the staff in the fall. I also put newsletter information on disabilities and mental health in our weekly parent newsletters at each one of our sites. I also do the parent satisfaction survey, which is we need to survey our parents every year so that they have input into the quality of our program. So I get that out and compile that and write a report up for that. And then we are also collaborating with PNC, who is buying some of our classrooms iPads to use in the classroom. WILL, which comes in regularly and reads and they bring books in to distribute to the children, and they talk to the children about all kinds of topics, sometimes health, sometimes safety, sometimes they're talking about social skills, things like that. And then Cooperative Extension also comes into our classrooms, and they do health and nutrition kind of trainings with the kids and feed them. On a regular basis, too. Anything else?
Well, Lynn mentioned some of the collaborations that we have, and that we have many community groups or agencies coming in and providing some additional information either to the children or to the parents or to the staff. We collaborate with the Center for Women in Transition, and we are providing early Head Start services at the center. So for those moms and children there, children who are younger than 3 years old, we're providing early Head Start at the center. And we are hoping to expand that to have a 3 to 5 year old group as well. However, we are facing, as it's in the news every, 5 minutes, the sequester issue. And so that would mean a approximately 8 to 10% cut in our funding, which would eliminate about between $500,000 and $600,000 from our grant from the federal government. The services that we provide through the Illinois State Board of Education grant, those are specific services required through the grant application process for providing certified teachers in 10 of our classrooms. So we're able to provide that level of education for that number of teachers in our classrooms. And then our other Head Start classrooms that don't qualify for the Illinois State Board of Education grant because of the that they are only 3.5 hour sessions. We have 2 staff with at least an associate degree, and most of our teachers have a bachelor's degree in early childhood education or development. Our family services are as much a part of our program as the child development services, and readying that child even from serving pregnant moms. Our goal, as Lynn said, is for school readiness, which includes family readiness, child's health readiness, and as well as what the child is learning in the classroom. We, for our school year that ended our data collection that ended the end of August of 2012, 94% of our children entered kindergarten identified as being ready for kindergarten, including the children that, in all of that count, children with a disability. So, again, yes, the services for children that are not qualifying for their school district services for one reason or another, but still having difficulty in the classroom, that's one of the main components of Lynn's position, is to support those children through support to their teachers and parents, and identifying those children and then identifying the strategies and then ensuring that we follow through on those strategies.
Do we have questions?
Questions?
I don't have a question, but what I do want to say is that I think we get everything that we possibly can for the small amount of money that we are able to give you, and I applaud what you do. Thanks.
Anyone else? Thank you. Thank you very much. Pace?
I would like to say that the look on my face is because I'm potentially bored with my own presentation, but that's not what it is. I'm having personal disability issues that are coming in right now. So some of you who may have known me for a while and have seen some transitions, literally when you see my eyelids droop or my face droop, I'm not falling asleep here in this presentation. I have disability things that are setting in right at this moment. So also, if you have some issues with hearing me, let me know that. And vocal projection is another thing that is hitting me. So I will try to do my best. Bear with me. using technology here for the presentation. So one moment. I'm going to do the speaking part and then go into the video, just so you know. Really? Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll see if we're going to have a video or not. We might just be looking at Nancy. good morning. My name is Jay Hadley Ravencroft, and I'm the Director of Programs and Advocacy at PACE Incorporated Center for Independent Living for People with Disabilities in Urbana. And I thank you, the board, for giving us an opportunity to present. I'd like to give you a bit of background that lays the unique foundation of our organization prior to showing the video, or maybe not. PACE is unique because of some core independent living movement concepts that frame our service delivery. Independent living philosophy, the concept of consumer versus client, the importance of peer counseling, and to illustrate the priority of consumer control versus consumer-directed services, lives, I quote the late Justin Dart Jr., "Nothing about us without us." In other words, don't make important decisions without having people with disabilities, intellectual disabilities, developmental disabilities, involved in those decisions, no matter what the disabilities are. And what I want to say about the things that I just encapsulated for you is I think what's most difficult for us, being as unique as we are, that we find is that those concepts, the concept of independent living, people don't know what that means. And if I define it for you, living as independently as possible. Okay, so if a parent comes in and says, I don't know if my adult child with intellectual disability can live independently, I don't know if I want that, that frightened me, I don't know what that means, that might be different. What is that? That seems really nebulous to somebody. But then we're going to ask that parent, what are you frightened of? What are you looking for? And then we're going to ask the adult with the intellectual disability or the developmental disability, what do you want? Not what is it that I, as the service provider, think is best, but what do you want? And then what we find is resistance, because the parent might say, whoa, 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 whoa. Okay, I'm the parent. You haven't been in this person's life. Pam's a parent of somebody with intellectual disability. And you haven't been in my son or daughter's life. How do you know? I've been there. I've been there when things happen. And now you're trying to tell me that my child can live independently? Okay, I'm going to show this to you just right now. Yes, I have a developmental disability of a different sort, okay? I don't have cognitive involvement. Some people would say, though, that this chair is not living independently because I'm strapped in, okay? Strapped in, and I'm having trouble speaking, can't reach the microphone. I'm asking for assistance. How is that independent? Except without this chair, without this strap, without this brace, I wouldn't even be here. And then I'm able to ask for my supports. Get the point? My supports, my phone. My supports, thank goodness for the microphone. Okay? These are my supports, then they're my natural supports. So for me, this is living independently, and thank goodness. And I'm going to say that because I would not still be employed. As I stare at Nancy, who a year and a half ago, I went into the office and I said, I'm quitting. And she said, the blank you are. Okay? Do you see what I'm saying? And so the same potential we see for anyone that comes in the door. Okay? The same potential for anyone who comes in the door. Okay, and so we serve people of all ages, all ability levels. all ages, all ability levels, and I think that that has been a misnomer for years. People think we serve only adults or only people with physical disabilities, and that's not true because we just have a very specific independent living philosophy, consumer control. What's the difference between consumer control and consumer directed? And I am, this is literally the vernacular that I use. I'm the person who's driving the bus. If I am the person who is in the office and I am the consumer, how does that work with differing ability levels? That's how it works. That person is literally at the helm of what's happening. What do you want to do? I want to learn how to ride the bus. Then that person is going to ride the bus however it is that they are going to ride the bus. If it takes a week, it takes a week. If it takes a year and a half, it takes a year and a half. Do you see what I mean? That's consumer control versus consumer directed, where someone is there in the decision but not at the center of it, directing it. Okay? That is where we're unique because, and I'm only illustrating using myself because I'm sitting here. The medical model view is there's something wrong with her, me. She needs to be fixed. That's not our view. Our view is the environment is what is handicapping. And we are saying, come on in. Come on in. And if we can provide that service, information, advocacy, skills training, peer counseling, we do that. If not, we refer out, and we work with many of the agencies in this room. That's what makes us unique. And the biggest point, which is why I quoted Justin Dart, nothing about us without us. So we started an agency with the idea that the consumers, some people say the board of directors, the consumers are above the board of directors. Because without the consumers, the agency wouldn't even exist. Okay? So that's who we are, and now we're trying to figure out if we can get that to start. So, I don't know. And if anybody else can help us, who might know the equipment. That wasn't the one. and if we do get to see this video was made in-house by PACE staff, has all of the PACE staff on it, and we also made the captioning. We got the equipment from the Statewide Independent Living Council, and we got the equipment with the intention of learning how to use it ourselves and then teach consumers how to do this for advocacy efforts. And we've already started with some of the deaf community. And one of the last things I was going to say is we need to take lessons from some of the consumers that Pam and Glenna work with. Because I, as I said, I'm the director of advocacy. Not so much. Some of the consumers that they work with actually send me the legislative alerts. Yeah. And, yeah. So.
Yeah, if you go there, right where you were, there's an arrow. And that thing that looks like a birthday cake, I don't know what that is. There, now over to the left.
In Andy's office is executive director. PACE and all centers for independent.
She's talking.
So move your other.
Sorry, everybody.
We wish you very happy holidays and an independent new year.
No.
And they start to learn the philosophy. pretty soon they're letting go of traditional thinking. And instead of the disability itself being a problem, they start to see that it's the barriers. Disability is a natural part of life. There are 10 principles of independent living. Civil rights, equal rights and opportunity for all, no segregation by disability type or stereotype. Consumerism, a person using or buying a service or product decides what's best for him or herself. Deinstitutionalization, no person should be institutionalized formally on the basis of disability. Demedicalization, individuals with disabilities aren't sick as prescribed by the assumptions of the medical model. They're not patients and don't require help from certified medical professionals for daily living. Self-help. People learn and grow from discussing their needs. Concerns and issues with people who have had similar experiences. Professionals are not the source of help for the most part. Advocacy. Systematic, long-term and community-wide change activities are needed to ensure that people with disabilities benefit from all that society has to offer. Barrier removal. In order for civil rights, consumerism, deinstitutionalization, demedicalization, and self-help to occur, architectural, communication, and attitudinal barriers must be removed. Consumer control, the organizations best suited to support and assist individuals with disabilities, are governed, managed, staffed, and operated by individuals with disabilities. Peer role model, leadership for independent living and disability rights is vested in individuals with disabilities, not the parents or the service providers or other representatives. Cross-disability. Activities designed to achieve the first 5 principles must be cross-disability in approach, meaning that the work to be done must be carried out by people with different types of disabilities for the benefit of all persons with disabilities. I work as an independent living specialist here at PACE 20 hours a week in the Opportunities for Independence program. Pam Klassert and I work together in this program. She works full-time, but she wasn't able to be with me today. We are funded by the Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board. Our jobs are to facilitate people with developmental and intellectual disabilities to live as independently as possible. We work with consumers on an individual basis and also facilitate a life skills group weekly. The consumer's needs are determined by the consumers. So I've done many things in this area, such as teaching people to learn to read, determine employment interest and aptitudes and job hunting skills, money skills, cooking, cleaning, time management, self and systemic advocacy, good food choices, fitness, social skills, training parents to communicate with schools and advocating for their children's educational rights, and many other things. For 10 hours a week, I provide services such as equipment loan, MTD applications to assist consumers in obtaining accessibility, and listen to consumers, then offer them information and referrals. I also devote time to keep staff focused on keeping appropriate consumer service records so we can pass audits done by our funding sources. I worked at PACE since November 2007 and find my work very interesting.
Hi, welcome to the iTAC Amplified Telephone Program at PACE. There are a wide variety of telephones that a person can select from here at PACE to help them with hearing better. There are five different models that you would use. First one is a cordless phone, and then we have some desk phones as well. You would want to try them all to see which of the telephones works best for you. This is governed by Illinois law, so this program must exist, and you can select from these phones by testing them out in a live situation. We would work with you to figure out which one works best for you. There are three qualifications for this program. The first qualification is that you would have a doctor-verified hearing loss. The second is that you're an Illinois resident. And the third is that you use the type of phone service that plugs into the wall. And if you have these qualifications that you meet and you would like to explore what an amplified phone can mean to you, then please work with us at PACE and we'll be happy to help you in that situation. Thanks.
PACE has a wonderful program for people age 55 and older with diagnosed vision loss, like diabetic retinopathy, macular degeneration, cataracts. And if consumers would like to live more independently in the community setting of their choice, like their home, for example, or even if they are in an assisted living facility and they want to learn how to navigate their environment, like with marked appliances and bump dots, or learn about a closed circuit television or a reading machine, or learn how to talk with their family so that they can be more supportive of the person with vision loss, or get all sorts of really wonderful adaptive devices, we can help this person achieve greater independence. The program has support groups and assistive technology and lots of independent living aids that we can show them that exist. Eric will now talk about assistive devices.
Hi. There are many different forms of accessible technology that we use here at PACE. One of them is a CCTV. The CCTV is used with individuals who have low vision to be able to see things in their daily lives. And so
What the camera is doing is it's taking a document here and it is enlarging it so that you can see it on the screen, so that people can achieve their independence. This is simply one idea of accessible technology at PACE.
In the reintegration program, we move qualified consumers who are between the age of 18 and 59 who reside in a nursing home back into independent living. These consumers must be Medicaid, Medicare eligible. Services that are provided are assisting the consumer in finding affordable housing, furniture, first month's groceries, home modifications, assistive equipment, community support, and personal assistant services. All these services in the reintegration program, on an average, is between $3,000 and $5,000 per month.
At each step of the way in the process of reintegration, we include the consumer in all of the decisions. The consumer chooses what neighborhood they would like to live in. They get to choose who they want as their PA. They have a choice in how they want their home decorated even. Our goal for 2013 is to move 13 consumers back into the community. We're currently working with 7 already. And when we move a consumer back into the community, it's a savings to the state of approximately $2,000 per person over nursing home placement.
The Center for Independent Living has 4 core services, and information and referral is one of them, and therefore I feel as though I am an integral part of the PACE team. Information and referral has 3 core calls at which I take personally. Housing, ramps, and general services. When it comes to housing, I aid consumers by remaining up to date on the housing options in the Champaign-Urbana area, and then speaking with them about their needs in terms of accessibility, finances, and their general wants. When it comes to ramps, consumers need help in both entering and exiting their homes, as well as more easily accessing their vehicles to achieve better access throughout the community. With inside this arena, I aid consumers by providing them the ramp resources list and aiding them in understanding the process of applying for the grants and loans available in this program. Finally, when it comes to general services, I aid consumers by finding out about things like food pantries, rental assistance, shelters, medical assistance, and other resources which can help them in their daily lives. And thus, information referral is a really encompassing program, but aids consumers in many aspects of their lives.
Hi. PACE means many things to many people. And as independent living coordinator, I work with people to establish their independence under their own control. And so what we do is we work with people to help identify what in their life needs to be changed, and we can work with them in several different capacities. And these capacities include information and referral resources, advocacy and access, skills development, and counseling. We may work with you in terms of finding a job, or we can work with you in terms of applying for disability, for example. So there are many different capacities that we can work with you in. Another of these capacities is if you qualify for a personal assistant. A personal assistant is a person who works with a person with disability in order to help them with the basic aspects of life, including cooking, cleaning, laundry, toileting, bathing, and grooming. In order to qualify for this, you must meet certain criteria, and I can explain that to you as well. Thank you very much.
As Director of Programs and Advocacy, I mainly help ensure that the programs that are executed here with independent living philosophy, consumer control, and the four core services. And so in that, I talk with staff and see what they want to plan for their programming, and also bring in programming that meets consumers' needs and the aforementioned core services. And I also do staff supervision and assist the executive director in doing my tasks that I just described. As advocacy director, I make sure that the staff and consumers and volunteers are participating in systemic and individual advocacy, which is one of the core services of any Center for Independent Living. So we make sure that we are on the pulse of whatever is a current advocacy effort. So for instance, Medicaid reform or changes in the home services program or the reintegration program, so that we can fight for what consumers need in order to achieve or maintain their independence.
Here at PACE, we have a group called Advocates for Access. Advocates for Access works to remediate problems in our community that need solving. Access to various aspects of life for people with disabilities. Are there cracks in sidewalks that need to be looked at? Are there traffic signals that are not working? Are there accessible features to the landscape that are not working? These are all of our concerns as a community, and with Advocates for Access, we work with you to identify and solve those issues. Again, that meeting is the third Wednesday of each month.
Everyone will eventually be affected by a person with a disability. You will either eventually get one yourself or someone you care about will. It may seem small and insignificant, but even a small disability can be life-altering. Very few people will be able to go through their entire life without encountering someone with a disability that is close to them. So get involved. Stand up when you see things that need changing. You can help PACE continue to work improving lives of people with disabilities by becoming a PACE member. It's only $15 a year. The benefits are you can borrow our equipment from Equipment Loan Closet at no cost to you. You'll be allowed to vote on board members and be notified of upcoming events that PACE is involved in. With the exception of support groups, which are usually geared towards the disability they are meeting about, the memberships list is always included in important PACE announcements and always invited to PACE events.
Thanks for coming to the PACE Open House. PACE works because of the people who pitch in and spread the word.
I know that we're kind of going over here, but I just want to say quickly that the nice thing about having all these services is, like for CCDB, the people that we work with that you have the, you know, that we have the grant for, they use the other services as well. Like we had a woman that came in that could barely talk, really smart, but she found out about the Braille, and now she's second level Brailing. There was a young woman that came in just for a visit from the transition program, and nobody realized that she had an implant and hearing aids, but the people that she was with, including her staff, didn't know that she knew how to sign. And so when she went to the deaf services coordinator, she started signing, and her status like rose immediately, because her friends were like, whoa, man, I didn't know you knew how to do that. So having all those different services integrated in the same building helps our consumers that have developmental disabilities maybe learn a different avenue, like the Brailing or the sign language, or having, you know, if they're a person that's blind, then having the Braille on their home, but they come to our program too. So when they get there, they're CCDB, I think I forgot to be there, but when they see the other opportunities that they can learn and do things, it opens up a whole new world for a lot of our folks.
That's the whole idea of societal.
Anyway, that's all I have to say.
And I would add that, as you can tell, there's a lot of people that are a little bit different, but there's 23 centers that are in the state of Illinois, and
Thank you. Any questions? Comments?
I do have a question, and it's just simply, can you tell us the number of people with intellectual or developmental disabilities that you actually work with the CCDDB money?
Right now we have 10, I think it's 10 that we have that are current. Some of our folks come, we serve a lot of adults, and so sometimes people come to us with a specific need, like I need to do, my freezer's packed and I don't know how to figure it out. So they might be with us for 3 or 4 months, and then they've met that specific need. Another person was actually with the Center for Women in Transition, but she didn't know, she was from Chicago, she didn't know how to use a bus. Her kids were in Danville, and so we helped her access, you know, how she could get to Danville and back to see her kids, and then she was gone. So we don't have like a core parent group of people, just because we serve so many. You know, ours is until age 21, so it's a little bit, it's kind of a moving target. Okay. We'd like to serve more.
Yeah,
for sure.
Thank you.
Our group is so diverse. I mean, we have, like, our life skills group. We have one young woman that's in her 20s that has autism, who's nonverbal, that sits in her chair, curled up. And then we have people that live in their own apartments that take the bus to the group. You know, I think our youngest is 23. Our oldest is 62. You know, one person's blind. And I mean, here's a group that we're dealing with on a weekly basis. I mean, we go from here to here, and we have to coordinate services so that everybody's meeting a need. The good thing about that is that they help each other. Like, you know, we had a picnic, and, you know, the people that know transportation, they were saying, well, let's get on the brown and the blue, and so, like, they figured it out. So that's, I mean, that's why our group is kind of different.
Okay, good. Thank you.
That wasn't so specific, the numbers, but...
What I can tell you as director of programs is that I see the numbers increasing greatly, because there has been a little bit of miscommunication with past staff that have been directing, and that is no longer. All I can say is it's been corrected, and we are all completely on the same page. We know exactly plans that are in place. And I can tell you that it's like the sun has come down and everything is open and everybody's completely, we're just on. So I actually see numbers going like that. And because the people are there to serve, but I now know that things have been corrected and
operationally, we've changed things.
Operationally, entirely.
It's everybody always has to come to PACE. We're going to do more.
It's, yeah.
Where we got to them.
And it's not just with CCDDB, but you'll see. You're going to see some difference.
Yes, ma'am.
I just like to say that I really enjoyed hearing all these presentations about the program over the past few months. Because I learned so much. And I think it's
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. Thanks again, all three of you. You did terrific. And we appreciate very much your coming and telling us about it. I think we've already talked about the funding application, so we'll go on to Anti-Stigma Alliance.
Do you want me to do it? Help me out, Pete. There's not a lot that we can share right now. So the steering committee will be meeting in early March, less than 1 week before my deadline for a full-page print ad in the Ebertfest manual. So that's a little bit of a problem. Otherwise, we've got, we know the film, but that information is still embargoed, so I can't tell you. There will be a panel discussion. That'll be the focus of our activities this year. It'll either be on Friday, April 19th, or Saturday, April 20th, in the day before everyone goes. It's at the Illini Union, before everyone goes over to the festival. So we'll have, we get to be involved in the selection of panelists, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. So that'll be one of our topics at the steering committee meeting. Yeah. I'd like to add that the Down Syndrome Network had a brilliant idea, and I know it was brilliant because I thought of it, too, several months before. And it turns out Ebertfest will not be able to accommodate our great idea this year, so we'll hold on to it, and maybe next year we'll find a way to do it, but it would have...
What's a cliffhanger?
Yeah, it's a... Can I say what?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, it was... because, you know, for many years, the Anti-Stigma Alliance has hoped for involvement from educators and, you know, so a real, like a real direct line to youth in this community and also connection to the family support groups is very valuable to the Anti-Stigma Alliance. The idea was to have a contest for, like, 30-second video PSAs related to stigma, maybe bullying. Maybe the topic is the R Word campaign because that's occurring right at the same time as Ebertfest this year, but anything in the range of our discussions of stigma so far would be a great target for a competition like that, and then to show the winning entries during the festival. It's not possible right now to do that piece. I can't think of another way to adequately celebrate that kind of effort. Like, we could put them on our Facebook page, but 100 people will see them. That's maybe not enough of a prize. So I think we won't move forward with an idea like that this year, but we do have those connections now to several educators and to the family networks that I think we could probably develop an idea like that if we can create a good enough ending for it. You know.
I have nothing.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Barb, do you have anything for us on... You've got to save the date?
Yeah, the date is October 12th. For the next school week, so it's at 12th. And the committee will be coming together probably in April.
Thank you. So, October 12th. Okay. Do we have anything else? If not, we're agenda. Thank you.